Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we begin a brand new broadcast week at the Horn. It is the 22nd day of February 2016, and by this time next week, we will be done with February, the longest, shortest month in the calendar as we appreciate it. Yes, indeed. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and enjoy the madcap merriment and mayhem that is the real-time multimedia extravaganza known as Horn Chat. Good evening to Anatole, Jug of Punch, King of Cups, Labor Man, Little Gray, Tim from L.A., all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, who has folded... Oh, this is a new one. Sparky, being a third-stage guild navigator, has both folded space to become Man Cave and at one and the same time has remained Sparky. He is the Kwisatz Haderach. Yes, indeed. This is, of course, a listener-supported operation. I have to mention that at the beginning of every program so that we can keep the bills paid. We try to raise $200 every evening. Thank you very kindly for keeping this program on the air for as many years as you have. No Buy Gold Now ads, no Bose Wave Radio ads, no right-wing flooring liquid lumber ads, no General Steel Quonset Hut ads, no ads for herbal erection remedies or herbal hair growth tonics or any of the, none of that. Just your determination to have access, free access for anybody who wants it to independent progressive broadcasting. Plain and simple. You know, we don't charge for the podcast, we don't charge for the stream access, we don't charge for the rerun stream. We don't charge for nothing around here. We are not very good at this capitalism business at all. Nope. I guess I'm never going to figure out a way to marry my daughter off to somebody who'll put her in a $10 million Manhattan apartment. Damn it. Oh, well. So, anyway, if you would like to help us keep the program going, and gosh, I hope you do, then by all means, run over to headonradionetwork.com to the tab called Contribute, okay, yeah, and click there, and you'll find a screen full of data to fill out. We try not to be too intrusive about it. It's the PayPal interface. It's their stuff. You can leave the two blank about... what it is you do working for big guy industries and how much your commission is there out there working for Herb Tarlick. Yeah, and just get to the next screen. And at the next screen, you can choose PayPal account, MasterCard, Visa, Discover. Hell, I think American Express. No Diners Club. But... hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes. And so here we are at Moran Monday. And, you know, there's Morans. Oh, yeah, there's Morans. But it was a tough weekend, wasn't it? Kind of hard to crank up the Calliope when we had another outbreak of freedom. You know, it was kind of odd. Agnes had directed my attention to an active shooter situation in Columbia, South Carolina, outside of a mall there. And then, lo and behold, Kalamazoo, where freedom broke out. And I think the best way to approach this is merely to go with the words of our good friend Paul from Parts Unknown. Paul says, I'm sure one of the topics that will be discussed tonight is the gunman from Michigan. Don't worry, I'm not going to comment on the fact that nothing will be done with gun control or mental health on this issue. Paul from Parts Unknown values his time and realizes it would be absolutely wasted in trying to think that this government, especially this Congress, has any interest in making sure that maniac gunned-up Uber drivers don't blow away children. Sorry, that was me, not Paul. No, Paul from Parts Unknown continues, when the story broke late Saturday night, I saw the news alert and mentioned it to my wife. The story was new, so the headline simply said, gunman had shot and killed six people in Kalamazoo, Michigan. As the evening went on, I thought about the victims of these shootings, having no idea where Kalamazoo is in relation to Flint. I thought about the victims being African-American, thinking about the fact that they are already being poisoned by lead in the water, and if that was not enough, that they're now being poisoned with lead another way. I mentioned this to my wife. I asked her, why do you think it is that I think the victims of these shootings are black? Her response, why do I think the shooter is probably Muslim? I guess perception is everything. The shootings reminded her of the D.C. sniper shootings in the mid-2000s. I find it odd that there is still no information on the victims in this story, but we do know the shooter is a middle-aged white guy, which incidentally was what I assumed. I haven't checked in the story today, but is there any news on the victims, or were they just random victims? That's exactly what they were. They were just random people who got in the way of this guy's right to keep and bear arms. Wolverines! That's as close as I can get to a Michigan accent. Yeah. And Paul from Parts Unknown continues, what were some of your first thoughts when you heard this story before the details came out? A good litmus test is, what do you picture in your mind when you hear there is yet another shooting in America? And this isn't just directed at me, this is hopefully the source for a conversation among the entire Horn family community congregation. How do you picture the shooter? I seem to picture someone who would fit right in with the open carry movement or occupying a bird sanctuary in Burns, Oregon. Have a good program, Bob. Well, thank you. Thank you, Paul from Parts Unknown, and you have a lovely evening yourself. And I guess it's probably advisable just to, because, you know, Dr. Bill does this at the close of every program, and yeah, he says, you know, be safe. Be safe. Stay safe. In America. Stay safe. Because you never know when some evangelical fundamentalist homosexual with who is just waiting in anticipation to vote for Trump come November. Well, you just never know when one of those people's gonna break out and turn into an awful gun owner. Because I'm sure this guy was a lawful gun owner before he squeezed the trigger. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there's nothing left to say, is there? Over on Facebook, my buddy Joy typed the following. Guns, 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 guns. And there were a lot more repetitions of the word guns. I mean, what? You know, we've lost. You understand that? We've lost. And please, please, don't tell me that either of the two Democratic candidates is going to make any headway at all. In addressing this problem, because I live in reality world and I know what our Congress is. Please don't insult me or your intelligence. Just don't. As Carol Baker, Queen of the Minion, says, doughy white guy, that's always my first thought. And you know what? You really can't go much wrong making that assumption, because probably 99 times out of 100, that's correct. And the Kalamazoo thing just gets weirder and weirder, because he was an Uber driver. Now, I'm sure we will not want to bother ourselves in the course of trying to understand this this act of Second Amendment freedom by asking questions about, the Uber business model. Now, see, I've never dealt with Uber. I know people who have. For instance, the couple of times I was in Madison, Wisconsin, I know they've got a unionized taxi cab company there. And those were always the cabs that we took. Uber, on the other hand, not so much. Uber drivers are what you call... Wait a minute.
Independent contractors!
Which is a way of saying somebody who works a lot, very hard, for very little money, and then gets stiffed with all the paperwork into the bargain. Yeah. Uber has a business model that is roughly the transportational equivalent of Walmart. You know, when Walmart first comes to your town, they'll undercut the prices of every store around in order to try to put those stores out of business and make you a captive to the Walton family empire. And they're quite often successful at that. Well, Uber does much the same. And frankly, I think they had losses of what, one globally, losses of like 1.65, I don't know what, compared to incoming revenues of 1.2, but they're so well capitalized by companies like Amazon and, the new economy, that they can afford to just hemorrhage money as they achieve transportational hegemony. So I'm not likely to be a big Uber fan, but I have seen in the past the stories where Uber drivers have tried to advocate for better treatment, better wages. I mean, Uber's rates can be so low that they don't even add up to the fuel and the mileage wear and tear on the individual vehicles, for which Uber bears no responsibility. Yeah. So let's not talk about that. It's a bizarre story, though, because along the way, having heard that there was an active shooter out there, one group of people actually got in the car with the Freedom Protector saying they were getting in the car because they heard there was an active shooter. And he dropped them off at their destination and then went out and shot somebody some more. Murka.
The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe. Hallelujah, amen. Under God.
Yeah. How's that for bizarre? And he really wasn't too talkative, the guy. He did say that he'd been driving for 7.5 hours, and he was... Well, he was pretty tired. No OT at Uber, by the way. As Carol Baker puts it, doughy white guy with an unknown axe to grind, murders six and seriously wounds others, victims supposedly chosen at random. He's described as a husband, a father, and a normally even-tempered guy who liked guns. Sounds like a real nice fella. You'll see a lot about mental illness as this story unfolds. You will not see the word thug or even criminal because the shooter is not black. We know the shooter was not black because he was taken alive. This is America, where cops are primarily afraid of people of color, be they 12 years old playing with a toy gun in a Cleveland park or just offering up their wallet when ordered to produce it. Their chances of getting out of an encounter with police, with their lives, even when not armed, well, those chances are drastically reduced based on the amount of melanin in their skin. You will not see the word terrorist used in regard to this killer because the perp does not have a Middle Eastern-sounding name, does not wear a turban, does not practice Islam, does not have brown skin. People are still bitching about Fort Hood and San Bernardino. Thank you, Rafael Eduardo Cruz. San Bernardino. But mass shootings by angry, pissed-off white guys are just the price of our freedom. America can paste one more picture on its mass shooter wall of shame because this very predictable event did not have to happen. And yes, before the sun sets today, the president will personally be blamed. Thanks, Obama. Thoughts and prayers, y'all. Thoughts and prayers. Don't forget the thoughts and prayers, because that's all we're going to offer. No solutions, because we're no good at solutions. America can never, ever have solutions. That's not realistic. That's not practical. Exactly, Gerald. Wolverines. Yep. Yeah, and by the way, Gerald, don't think that just because there's actually a legitimate Adolf Hitler story. Oh! He got away with it. 620. Who had 620? Hey, 420 in the Mountain Time Zone. Damn it, Gerald. No, we've got, there's plenty of stuff to talk about, and, well, it, by the way, though, since probably nobody else will talk about it, let's do, in the wake of one of their drivers slaughtering six human beings and critically injuring a couple more, according to Reuters, Uber said on Monday, it would not be changing the way it screens its drivers following the fatal weekend shooting rampage by a Michigan driver for the car riding service. The company also said the alleged suspect, Jason Dalton, had received very favorable feedback on the app from previous riders. Great ride. Arrived promptly. Didn't murder me. Uber's chief security officer. Who knew? They had one. Joe Sullivan said, there were no red flags, if you will, that we could anticipate something like this. Well, see, Chief Security Officer Joe Sullivan has probably, from the sound of that, been through something I like to call law school. What tips me off? The word anticipate. I would know for a fact that Uber Chief Security Officer Joe Sullivan had been to law school if he had said, there were no red flags, if you will, that we could reasonably foresee something like this. Because, see, this doesn't have a goddamn thing to do with whether or not Uber's okay with having murderers for drivers. This has to do with the fact that Uber has found out it had at least one. And they have gone into, well, they, for those of us who favor a certain movie franchise, they have gone to the mattresses, and they have consulted their wartime consigliere. Who told them, tell them there was no way this was reasonably foreseeable. Because somewhere out there, because we really don't compensate the victims living or dead of outbreaks of freedom like this, the gun just went off. Somebody's probably going to get a lawyer of their own. And that lawyer is going to try to sue Uber. And Uber has already telegraphed, if you will, to us that they will say, hey, never mind our screening processes. We can't possibly reasonably foresee that our overworked, underpaid, thoroughly unappreciated drivers won't just snap one day and start wasting people. No way could we anticipate something like this. And then, see, they can't change the way they screen their drivers. You know, even they can't say that publicly, you know, even if they do, because then, why'd you change your screening problem? Well, it was probably because you realized that you were missing out on a whole bunch of gun goobers. See how it works? Sure. About 24 minutes past the hour, nice note on Facebook from our buddy Michael in Madison. Fucking hell, man. Is it 5 o'clock yet? Michael in Madison, being in Madison, is in the central time zone. For the last 30 minutes or so, I've been flipping back and forth between two different allegedly progressive talk stations, and all I hear is hateful, sick, conservative bullshit. If I wanted to hear this ear pollution, I could listen to Limbaugh. I'm just glad Bob doesn't give any airtime to regressive fuckwits. 5 more minutes of this shit, and I'm going to take up trepanation. We need a power drill emoji. Well, thank you for your kind expression of confidence, Michael. I really do appreciate it. And no, we will never willfully, willingly, or knowingly put a right winger on the air on this program, because God knows you can. It's not just that you can. It's not just that you can hear them on all kinds of conservative radio. It's that you can hear them, oh, for sake, on allegedly progressive ones. Yeah. No. No wing nuts here. Note earlier from our buddy Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, good Lord. Did you see this editorial by Charles Koch? Has it reached your local fish wrap? Between David Brooks' fawning piece on President Obama and this piece, I fell into a parallel universe like that episode of Twilight Zone. Check it out if you can stand it. Oh, dear God, I've just been following West Virginia politics, and it's bizarre enough. As Gerald just reminded me a few minutes ago, the Senate here in West Virginia has now passed the everybody gets to tuck away a freedom protector bill. By the way, you might find this humorous. Uber can't operate in West Virginia just yet, but our teabagger legislature is working hand over fist to make that happen. Everybody's going to be packing heat in the Mountain State, though. I guess, except, you know, me and maybe Gerald and Boss Man Wayne and a couple of others. Because freedom, right? So anyway, who knew that Charles Koch reads the Charlotte News and Observer? All the ways I agree with Bernie Sanders. Ooh, I think we're going to have a little damning with faint praise here. As he campaigns for the Democratic nomination for president, Vermont's Senator Bernie Sanders often sounds like he's running as much against me as he is the other candidates. I've never met the senator, but I know from listening to him that we disagree on plenty when it comes to public policy. Shouldn't that read, I have never bought the senator? Because he's bought a lot of other ones. Even so, I see benefits in searching for common ground and greater civility during this overly negative campaign season. That's why, in spite of the fact that he often misrepresents where I stand on issues, name 'em, asshat, the senator should know that we do agree on at least one, an issue that resonates with people who feel that hard work and making a contribution will no longer enable them to succeed. The senator is upset with a political and economic system that is often rigged to help the privileged few at the expense of everyone else, particularly the least advantaged. He believes that we have a two-tiered society that increasingly dooms millions of our fellow citizens to lives of poverty and hopelessness. He thinks many corporations seek and benefit from corporate welfare, while ordinary citizens are denied opportunities and a level playing field. I agree with him.
Ooh, how about that?
And it goes on from there, yada yada. When our government can pick winners and losers, surprise framework in deciding whether to support or impose policies, not determined by its effect on our bottom line or by which party sponsors the, but by whether it will make people's lives better or worse. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. Chuck. And then there's a paragraph when he goes after the war on poverty. And he doesn't like that. And right. Oh, okay. No, he doesn't read the Charlotte News and Observer. The Charlotte News and Observer bogarted that thing from the Washington Post. Tough day in Michigan. Heather says, hello. I live 60 miles from Kalamazoo. I live 60 miles from Mishawaka, the Martin supermarket shooting. I live flat 5 blocks from the woman who accidentally shot herself with the freedom protector she put in her bra. Anyhow, we shouldn't be used to this. It makes me sad. Well, and that's the fact. It grieves me to my gut. But how the hell do we not get used to it? I mean, if at 5 o'clock every day somebody comes and throws a brick through your window, come 5 o'clock on the you know, 3 weeks from next Wednesday, are you going to be sitting there waiting for somebody to come and put a brick through your window? Are you? Because you've gotten used to it. You've come to expect it. And I do. I expect it. Carol just says, tell Michael and Madison I hear they're looking for Uber drivers. Oh. Asa said about my mention of the active shooter in Columbia, South Carolina. Did Pastor Pillow go on a rampage? Nope. I was worried about Pastor Pillow, though. But he's well. All is safe. This was apparently a shooting outside an athletic shoe store. Yeah, with only a couple of combatants. But, you know, don't get comfortable. There'll be another one. And after that, another one. And after that, another one. And after every one of these, Alex Jones will be there to scream, false flag! They're coming to get your guns! Only nobody ever comes to get their guns! And we'll talk some about mental illness, but we're not serious about mental illness because we sure as shit don't want to do anything like make sure that every American has access to appropriate health care, including mental health care. Never ever. Right. See, Steve in New York says, hate to say this, but getting used to it is the only way I know that I can deal with it. And the only way you don't get used to it, the only aspect by which you don't get used to the domination of our country by the freedom protector industry is when it happens to somebody you love or somebody you know or care about or you. Then you don't get used to it. You get maimed or killed by it. And because we've got to make sure that pasty-faced, doughy paranoids who vote fucking Republican in this country can have all the guns that they want, then we have to be willing to sacrifice. We have to be willing to sacrifice the very existential freedom enjoyed by the people who get, you know, Wolverined. Do you see how it works? Yeah. Yeah, meanwhile, we've got the ongoing Apple controversy, which I think we handled rather nicely on Friday. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, back here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, damned IED went off the other night. Carol put me onto this. WCHS-TV reported on it. Yeah. Long about midnight this past, an improvised explosive device, or IED, as the journalist puts it, they exploded in Hanford, Kanawha County, West Virginia. Caused minor damage to the surrounding area, no damage to actual human beings. We dodged one. Yeah, I figure it was just some disaffected poor miner that's still angry about the war on coal. Up over in Australia, Robert says, another shooting? Another mass shooting in the U.S.? Oh, well. Sorry for the way that sounds. I know real, live, actual people died. No good guy with a gun about to stop the bad guy with a gun before he killed six and wounded others. Nope, sorry. Because that's the thing about the bad guy with the gun. He always has the drop on everybody. Right. And it's not like he just stood around and shot six people. He shot a couple here, a couple there. And, you know, when the police said, "Stop, police," he stopped. And again, as Carol noted, that's how we know dude was white. Of course, you know, random mass shooting is sort of a tip-off to the white part, too. Under the subject line, "The Last Straw," Steve in New York says, "I don't like to denigrate any person who at least is somewhat progressive, but I'm now a former Stephanie Miller listener after hearing her spew the meme of Hillary as a progressive and then Camel, meet Straw, accepted Uber as an advertiser." Say what you will, but I mean, they ain't a progressive organization. Where guns are concerned, Ron and Raleigh says, "The way I see it is that a guy goes out and buys a piece for his personal protection. He carries his freedom protector around for months, but doesn't get a chance to protect his freedom. Something in his mind snaps. He thinks to himself, why am I carrying this freedom protector around if I can't use it? So he picks some random folks to try out his piece on. I call it the call of the wild." I don't know what GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, is going to do with the everybody toe to peace bill here in West Virginia. I hope he vetoes it, but by the same token, this time through, they may figure out a way to override the veto. And then it's law anyway. And I go back to the fact that I don't run around being afraid of much of nothing. But that scares the hell out of me. Because I know who I live with. Oh, yes. I mean, we've already got shootings in bars. This is going to make them make less? What? Huh? And there's a certain segment of the populace that will feel morally compelled to go out and buy one, and then they'll feel sexually compelled to strap it on everywhere they go. And who's going to tell them to... And this isn't open carry, okay? This is concealed carry. So who's going to know? Huh? Yeah? What? Who's going to know? And if you do know, are you going to be the one to say, go put your gun away? And have him get all red-faced, because he's going to start out as a white guy, and he's going to go to red-faced pretty quick. Red-faced and angry, and why do you hate freedom? All right. Kevin says, in regard to Uber, you know you don't want to discuss Uber business model, but this article from 9-10-14 pretty much gives you an idea. Ignoring things like the Americans with Disabilities Act, overtime, etc., seems to be their M.O. Is it any wonder that one of their drivers did what he did? In addition, I read a story last week that Uber is actively looking for former convicted felons to drive for them. While that in itself doesn't bother me that much, given our prison industrial complex, the fact that they're willing to ignore simple background checks should make anyone wary of using them for public transportation. I get your point. Tim, under the subject line, Uber and respondeat superior. We're going to get you into law school yet, Tim. Apparently, Uber failed when they allowed a mentally ill person to drive for them. Can the victim sue Uber under respondeat superior? No, that's what the theory would be. And Uber would say, no way was this reasonably foreseeable. Because it has to be, you have to have reasonable foreseeability, or else, yep, sorry, wah, 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 you lose. As to Gert's veto here in West Virginia, Gerald points out a veto would be ceremonial at best. They'll fast-track it to override like they did right to work and repeal prevailing wage. Yeah, they've figured out what they're doing. Oh, a good question, Carol. Did the Uber shooter get taken to Burger King? White Castle, at least? Not necessarily sure what's popular up that way. But by the way, something interesting I ran across goes back a number of years, but once upon a time in Australia, they did a study of acts of criminal violence. And they found out that at least there, they could draw a statistical correlation once all the necessary allowances had been made, you know, that made it a valid statistical study. They found that they could draw a direct line between acts of violence and elevated levels of lead in the body and bloodstream. Mm-hmm. Now, this may go back to when there was lead added to gasoline, or lots of lead in paint, right? Yeah. So, not saying, just saying, that's another little blip on the rate on the future radar for places like Flint, Sebring, Ohio. There will probably be elevated levels of violence unless they figure out some way to do a Flint diaspora to sort of mitigate the effects and spread people out and depopulate and ethnically cleanse Flint. As to respondeat superior, Steve points out, it has to be an employee-employer relationship. Now, in California, it is, but elsewhere, no, not so much. You can get away with a lot under the rubric of independent contractor. Oh, yes, yes, you certainly can. Yeah, like I said, it's a hell of a Moran Monday, isn't it? And we haven't even gotten to the Nevada caucuses or the South Carolina Republican primary. Do we have a lot to talk about there? Do we? I mean, we saw something fairly spectacular this weekend in South Carolina. We saw the actual end for at least the next 10 or 15 years, we hope, of anybody named Bush being president of the United States. Unless Jebbia is still saying, well, you know, maybe I can run in 20. But that's pretty spectacular. We have seen the Republican Party have to come to terms with its own id. Oh, sure, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to be an American for a very long time. He still thinks he's in it to win it. And little Marco Rubio has declared himself to, has declared himself to be Harry Potter, and Donald Trump is Voldemort. And with Jebbia out of the way, God only knows what T-Rump will do to those two. He's already got a good running start on him. I mean, really, Rafaelito, okay? I know you're thinking about Super Tuesday and, you know, places like Alabama Stan and Mississippi Stan and Georgia Stan and all those good God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, upstanding, moral, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals. I don't think it's going to work for you, buddy. Nope. And Marco Rubio's in the race. Why? Because, wow, another third place finish. Super. They're having a hard time coming to grips with the fact that Donald Trump's going to be their nominee. But hey, don't despair. Bishop Willard Romney has endorsed little Marco Rubio. Sweet, huh? So he's got that going for him, which is good. Nevada? Well, I know a lot of people are depressed by Nevada because they were convinced that Bernie was going to win Nevada. Bernie was not going to win Nevada. I know, I'm after the fact and everything, but I began to not feel real good about it when the article came out showing that the Clinton camp or someone, you know, one of the many dark and shadowy dark money PACs, super PACs that are supporting her, when it became obvious that they were push polling in Nevada. And push polling is just nasty. Push polling is what was done in 2000 in South Carolina when the George W. Bush campaign started ringing phones all over the state saying, "Did you know that John McCain has a Negro baby? Would you still support John McCain if you knew he had a Negro baby?" Hillary was push polling, apparently especially geared toward the Latino community. And the irregularities were stunning. I watched video on Sunday of the caucus being held in a ballroom of the Paris Hotel in Las Vegas. It featured the guy running the caucus walking around and literally writing with a ballpoint pen, writing votes with a ballpoint pen on the palm of his hand. And then he certified the votes and he sent everybody away before he certified the delegates, and then everybody was just gone. Then there was the precinct where a Hillary partisan was heard to yell, don't vote or say. Don't vote for the socialist Jew. Funny, it was just a week or so ago that I imagined the push-pull robocall from Bill Clinton congratulating Bernie for being a Jew who won a primary in New Hampshire. And then it sort of comes true. Oh. And then there was the big English-only stink, apparently strategically raised by a Latina activist, who claimed that she was shouted down by Bernie supporters hollering English only. Only then it turned out that what actually happened was that they were looking for a Spanish translator. She said, I'll do it, but everybody knew that she was a hardcore Hillary partisan, and people said, neutral, 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 and Bernie supporters didn't yell English only at her. And then it turned out that she had taken $100,000 from the Clintons. So for the last day or so, day and three quarters, 6 7/8, we have been treated to all kinds of reports in the for-profit media saying that Hillary sure is building her momentum, Zipsum, you betcha by golly wow. When she beat Bernie by fewer points than she beat Barack Obama in Nevada. Then, as Steve notes, there was the precinct where Hillary supporters were caught putting on Nurses United-looking red shirts, claiming they supported Hillary. When, yeah, just all kinds of dirty business. Just nasty across the board. Look, these things are tough. Do not give up hope. Yes, South Carolina's coming, and you know what? If Bernie is within 10 points of her in South Carolina, I'm going to call that a win. With all the dog whistling that's gone on, yeah, damn straight. And remember, there are jewels coming up. Minnesota is a caucus state. Colorado is coming. This thing's far from over. You want to know how far from over this is? This. Under the subject line, almost heaven, Ray just emailed me and said, a poll shows that Bernie Sanders wins West Virginia by a big margin among the Democrats. Does this surprise you? Well, this was apparently a poll that was done by West Virginia Metro News, which is owned by a wild-eyed Republican by the name of John Racy, who has run for elected office several times, and even West Virginians won't let him have an office. I mean, this is a guy who said not getting to smoke in his Morgantown office was the exact equivalent to being put in a cattle car and sent off to a Nazi concentration death camp. That's John Racy. So the outfit's kind of suspect. And yeah, as Carol points out, I miss the meaning of momentum when a 40-point lead is slashed to a 5-point win. Tell me how momentum works again. Because it is. I mean, I saw a Charles Blow column from the New York Times in which he said, well, I mean, you know, like, Bernie won New Hampshire, but you know, not by that much. Yeah, no shit. But anyway, here in West Virginia, it's true. Polling right now shows that if the West Virginia primary were held today, Bernie Sanders would thump the living bejesus out of Hillary Clinton. Which, if for no other reason, is inspiring because it means that progressive Democrats in West Virginia, at least, understand what it means to be a progressive Democrat and understand what it means to have a primary process. Primaries or caucuses, I guess. I've never been to one, so I really can't speak. Are kind of neat. They are not elections per se. They are nominating processes to determine who will be in the election because we have a first past the post winner take all system. So you can't have, except in a few limited instances, you can't have your choice of five or six people in November. Man? Eh? But you've got several. Often you'll have several to choose from in a given office in a primary. In the Democratic primary in West Virginia, we're going to have Hillary Clinton to choose from. We're going to have Bernie Sanders to choose from. And that guy in prison in Texas. Hey, you may remember the guy in prison in Texas. I can't remember his name. I know Gerald knows it. The guy in prison in Texas, he beat... He beat Barack Obama in the 2012 Democratic primary here. Really? But those are good numbers. Because it looks like a thumping. And it means that Democrats here understand what primaries are for. You know, support whoever you want to support, but it doesn't mean the person who doesn't support your candidate is necessarily a bad person. I personally don't think that there's anything progressive about Hillary Clinton. I mean, she's told us she's the practical one. She's the realist. Yeah, okay. But I'm gonna enjoy our primary. But that brings me to a note. And I want to share it with you because it was sincerely sent and it was sincerely offered. And it comes from Kim and Malin up in New Jersey who have been listening to the show, the program, for a very, very, very long time. And when someone takes, you know, I read the massive volume of mail that I get, whether I get it over on Facebook or whether I get it through email or whether I get it as a message on Skype or Twitter, I read my stuff. I can't always respond at the time But I will. One, it always affects me and impacts me in terms of my thinking. And I damn sure do appreciate the time it takes to write these things. So Kim wrote, Malin and I love your show for many years, but we really need to express something that's been on our minds regarding Hillary and Bernie. As you, we love Bernie's view on everything. But the election is not about which one wins the nomination. It really is solely about having the Democrat win. Neither H nor B will get any legislation passed that will further the liberal or progressive agenda. Their sole purpose will be to change the Supreme Court and to halt any of the conservative agenda. So it bothers us deeply to hear all the Hillary bashing, even though we agree that she is a hard person to like politically or personally speaking. We would like to focus the political discussion to be on bashing the Republican candidates and the Republican agenda. Your listeners should be reminded of the importance of winning the election and not on who our nominee is. We should refrain from bashing Hillary, as this election is not about her shortcomings. I fear that all the Hillary bashing on your show and others will serve to lessen her chance of winning if she gets the nomination. Let's instead focus on how outrageous Trump is, as I fear he is electable as our Cruz and Rubio. If we lose, we're all screwed for the rest of our lives. If we lose, we might need to move out of the country. The American electorate is historically stupid, enough to elect Ronald Reagan twice and the Bushes three times. Trump's a real possibility. We need to stand strong with both of our two candidates. Please, no more Hillary bashing. Sincerely, Kim and Malin. I can't receive a note like that and simply ignore it, nor would I. But I don't feel like I have not been trying to overtly, and I hope I'm not perceived as disingenuous in this. I have not been trying to overtly bash Hillary Clinton. What I have done is talked about the substantive policy differences between the two and why it is that I am far more comfortable voting for Bernie Sanders than I am voting for, you know, Hillary Clinton. And I'll say this much. I think the political and philosophical space between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is a lot narrower than the space between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. There's also this. The polls for November, such as we have now, and everyone knows that these things can change, but they show Bernie beating Trump. They don't show Hillary beating Trump or Cruz or Rubio. Maybe she beats Trump, but she loses to Cruz and Rubio. That much I recall. Now, I don't have my moth-eaten purple velvet robe with the frayed appliqué moon and stars on it and the glow-in-the-dark lettering that says, Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby, written on it. Nor do I have my magic eight ball with the display that's cracked and reads, Constantly answer hazy ask again later. But I feel certain enough that if I lived in a state where you could make these kinds of wagers, I would go and put a $5 bill down on Hillary losing the presidential election to whomever is the Republican nominee. And that is with me saying, as I will again, let me reiterate, if she's the nominee, I am going to vote for her. I don't think I need to turn on the reverb for that, do I? If Hillary Clinton is the nominee of the Democratic Party, I will vote for her. But let me be clear about something. I'm happy about Bernie Sanders' candidacy. You know why? Because it affords me the opportunity that has rarely come my way in my voting life to really be proud to vote for somebody who's got a shot at winning. I've got a chance to do something my parents got to do, and I never have. I've got a chance to vote for somebody whose political values line up almost identically with mine in Senator Sanders. Now, let's see. Maybe, no. Neither of my parents ever got to vote for FDR. Because they had not turned 21 in time. My mother was born in 1925. My father was born in November of 1924. There's an outside chance that maybe aboard the aircraft carrier he got to vote for FDR, but I'd say it's pretty slim. But I do know that every time my grandparents on both sides got an opportunity to cast a vote for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, they did so, and they did so joyfully. They did so with pride. And if I had, and there's some of this out there, but if I had the opportunity to say this to somebody in the Sanders campaign, I would say this: do a better job of saying not democratic socialist. I don't have a problem with the phrase because I'm intelligent enough to know what it means. As are you. But say FDR-style Democrat. Say that a lot. An individual who has been near and dear to this program has been going hammer and tongs for a while in what seems almost like a crusade level of advocacy for Hillary. That individual lives here in West Virginia, where I live. And the argument put forward is that Bernie's just selling something that nobody will vote for. Because America's going to run away from democratic socialism. Maybe he's right. I don't know. I know Malin and Kim are right when they say that you'll never go broke, underestimating the intelligence of the American people. That probably doesn't help, does it? For me to say that, I don't mean Malin and Kim. But there's not a policy that Bernie Sanders is putting forward that would not be wholeheartedly embraced by, like, zombie FDR, if we could only ask him. Hell, if you could trot out zombie FDR and say, hey, by the way, Frank, we still don't have universal single-payer health care. What? Are you kidding me? What's wrong with you people? Yeah, well, see, Frank, I mean, there was this guy named Ronald Reagan. Oh, I think I saw some of his pictures. Terrible actor. He became president, Frank. What? You two terms for... No, I'm going to go be dead some more. Then again, I do come from a long line of real live, honest-to-God progressive liberals. Once upon a time, Oh, what was his name? Al Smith? Ran for president on the Democratic ticket in 1928. Roman Catholic. That man couldn't buy a vote in West Virginia with a trunkload of free liquor because he was a Catholic. Well, I mean, I guess the Catholics voted for him, but probably not many of them because, well, you know, prosperity, Hoover, chicken, pot. No, not that kind of pot. But by God, my grandfather and grandmother did. They somehow reached down into their... They had a mixed marriage. She was a Methodist Baptist, and my grandfather was kind of an atheist. But they both found a way to, you know, vote in that election. They voted for the Roman Catholic. So I guess I come by it honest. And everything will probably be decided by the time we get around to whenever it is in May that our primary is. But even if it is already decided, I am going to go to my polling place with a smile, a big old smile. I mean a grin like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush on my face. And I am going to vote for Bernie Sanders. Because it may be the only time in my life that I get to go and vote in a presidential primary and know that my morals, my ethics, my personal philosophy, not one damn thing are in the least bit compromised. I would have to engage in those compromises to vote for Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary. Primaries are for ideals. General elections are for pragmatism and nose holding and lesser of two evils voting. I'm not telling you how to vote. Jesus, wouldn't that be stupid? I'm telling you how I am going to vote. And why I'm going to vote the way I'm going to vote. Because there's one more thing. I'm not a single issue voter. I have never, ever gone to the polls and voted, for instance, because of the position of a candidate on, say, the precious little fetuses. But it does matter to me because it is so absolutely scientifically rare to have an opportunity to go and vote for somebody, especially a presidential candidate, who has made clear that what is done to my state, my region, my communities, my friends, my neighbors, my family, by the coal companies, that what they've done, they, with their Wall Street enablers, is immoral and probably criminal. This will probably be the only time in my life that I get to go and vote for a presidential candidate who says, we need to stop blowing up Appalachia just because it's Appalachia and it's got some shitty-ass coal under the ground. Is that too much? Am I asking too much? You know, my grandchildren, who are nowhere near voting age yet, may never get to vote for a candidate like this. This is our last chance. It will not come again. And I take that back. It may come again if Senator Sanders can prevail. I mean, do you realize that there is even audio out there of Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton saying that she would be willing to negotiate away a woman's right to choose? It's real. One of our dearest and another long-standing friend of the program, Beth, down in Dallas, who has devoted her life to women's reproductive freedom, shared that with me, and I couldn't hardly believe it when I first saw it, and I went, holy crap, no, really? And then I played the audio. And I've got a pretty good ear. I can tell when something's been edited. This wasn't edited. This was just her saying that, yes, if there was a bill in the Congress that took into account the health of the mother, she could certainly compromise on a woman's right to have an abortion. And didn't that take a ton of air out of my sails? Because, see, that was one of those things that I was keeping tucked away for my own good feelings. That if I did have to go and vote for Hillary in November, I could do so knowing that the one thing she would never, ever, 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 ever do was compromise on a woman's right to choose. And there she is in her own voice saying, oh, yeah, I could do that. So I don't want to be perceived as Hillary bashing. Given the choice between the two, I want her to win over Trump, but hear me now. She won't. She won't. Even her partisans acknowledge that she has some of the highest unfavorable ratings of any politician in American history. And while I will say what I'm doing, and I will encourage others to do the same, and I know others who are saying the same, there are some that who will not. Meh. So, yeah, I hope that is certainly, Malin and Kim, that is certainly my sincere answer. And I hope you don't perceive that I've been any way rude or sarcastic or any of the many other things that I can and I guess have been. But I wanted to offer that up you're never gonna tune into this program and hearing me going Benghazi. You're never gonna tune into this program and hear me talking about Hillary's email problem. But I don't know how not to talk about her mandatory minimum problem. Or her welfare moms are deadbeats problem. Or young black men or are super predators problem. Or the bankruptcy bill problem. Or the maybe we can just put the mountaintops back after we get the coal out of it problem. Or God alone knows the Iraq war vote problem. Or the problem of the people that she hobnobs with and calls friend, like Henry Kissinger and Madeleine Albright. You remember Madeleine, right? When she was asked if the cost of 500,000 little Iraqi children's lives was worth it to punish Saddam, she said, yeah, I think it was worth it. Those are facts. That's not bashing. I mean, I owe you a duty here. I don't know how many times I've said that this program is not here for entertainment value. If you find some entertainment in it, that's a bonus. There are any number of people far funnier than I will ever be. I'm one guy with a lovely, supportive spouse and a family. And everything I say here is my own opinion, unless they're facts. And when they're facts, well, they're facts. But I can't for the life of me. I cannot, for the life of me, sit here and blow smoke up your ass about Hillary Clinton's progressive awesomeness when it ain't there. When they do dirty tricks, like happened in Nevada, what value does this program have, to the extent that it has value, if I pretend it didn't happen? You know, in the for-profit media, you got to be careful who you talk about or what stories you cover, because you never know when one of those stories you want to do happens to be one of your dear darling advertisers. If Bose Wave Radios were unbeknownst to anybody, emitting, I don't know, waves that turned your brain to jello, and you wanted to do a story about the desperate need people have to get the Bose Wave Radios out of their homes before their brains turn to jello, but you couldn't do it because they advertise on your fucking program. Hey. We don't do that here. We can't do that here. We don't have any advertisers. It's just you and me. We, us. I guess this is probably the best time for me to explain that they didn't even bother suspending me from charm school. They just kicked my ass straight out and said, don't try coming back. You know, if we had millions of listeners, maybe. We'd have a functioning phone system for starters and never mind. But, you know, we could just do it just like C-SPAN and bring on a pro-Hillary caller and a pro-Bernie caller and a pro-Hillary caller and a pro-Bernie caller and a pro-Hillary caller and a pro-Bernie caller and just sort it out that way. But that ain't what we've got. And for good or ill, over the course of the years that this program has been on the air, we've earned a reputation for being pretty solidly progressive. And we know what it is, and we know what it sounds like, and we know what it looks like. And when it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, we generally recognize ducks. I mean, bashing Trump? God knows, we've got an abundance of that. Little Marco Rubio? Well, I don't put the word little in front of Hillary Clinton. I don't call her C. Linton like I do T. Rump. You know, I don't refer to her, you know, I don't have any of those Homeric designations for her. I think I'm being pretty gosh darn fair. Facts are facts. And, you know, you don't necessarily hear from anybody. For all I know, maybe we've lost listeners. Maybe there are people out there who, I mean, and I see them on my own Facebook page, and I don't get in flame wars with them. Or I try not to. What I've explained since Bernie entered this race is I am going to support Bernie Sanders up to my primary, because I have a sincerely held non-religious belief that he is by far better for the party and better for this country than Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. Who, by virtue of the use of Dr., Senator, and Secretary, you know, has a broad spectrum of skills and is a most accomplished human being. I still bear profound respect for her, the way she, for 11 hours, faced down that gang of poo-flinging chimps that passes for a congressional committee, or the Republicans thereon. That weird woman from Montgomery, Alabama, and you know, Trey Gowdy, who looked like he'd been a little long out of the wax museum with the condensation beginning to build up on the outside. You know, Carol points out, maybe if I didn't have to spend so much time defending Senator Sanders from the dirty shit being pulled by the Clinton campaign, I'd never mention her name. If her husband wasn't so busy comparing me, you, us, progressive people, to teabaggers, maybe we'd be a little kinder. But he really did that. How do you not mention that? You just let that, is that just water off a duck's back? Ah, well, campaigns are hard. You know, calling a Sanders supporter a teabagger is not the same as pointing out all the money that Hillary Clinton has taken from Wall Street. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that my eldest daughter and her little family, who bust their asses to get by, have a damn thing in common with the Clinton's daughter, who lives in a $10 million apartment mansion that takes up the length of an entire city block in Manhattan. Nothing. So again, and I'm not barking back. We've been friends for way too long, Kim and Malin. I'm not barking at you. And I hope I'm responding kindly and fairly and honestly and candidly. And your point about the necessity of not letting Trump be president is very, very well taken. But again, the fact that I'm not talking about the silly crap, you know, what kind of clothes she wears or her email or Benghazi or anything like that. The fact that I'm not talking about that doesn't mean there aren't a hell of a lot of people who are. And I don't think, I wonder, you know, we who support Senator Sanders are said to be the ones who aren't realistic, who aren't pragmatic, who aren't practical, that we believe in fairy tales. Fairy tales, that was the word that Bill Clinton used on Barack Obama back in 2008. But what kind of a bubble do you live in? And I don't mean you, Kim and Malin, I mean generally. What kind of a bubble do her supporters live in if they think that suddenly 25 years of building machine whose only purpose is to destroy Hillary Clinton in the most critical moment of her career? What kind of bubble do you live in if you think that that's just going to go away and people are suddenly going to look up and go, oh no, I really like her? Let me be clear. I neither like nor dislike Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. I don't even refer to her as Mrs. Clinton because I don't want to make it seem like somehow she's just an extension of Bill Clinton. She isn't. She is absolutely her own woman. It's not two for the price of one. And you could not have paid me to go through what she went through. She's most accomplished. And she has borne up under a hell of an offensive. And it will give me no joy to be right if she's the nominee and loses. Somebody remind me, if that happens, not to come on the air and say, I told you so. Because I won't do it, because we will be in mourning. A couple of notes. Kim in New York City writes, I wanted to write in to respond to Kim and Malin's email requesting the end of Hillary bashing. First, with all due respect, I truly don't think you've been bashing Hillary. Yes, you pointed out her real and unfortunate negatives, and I believe there are many, but you certainly haven't been bashing her. While I, too, will probably hold my nose and vote for Hillary if she's the nominee, I will, until the last viable primary vote is cast, back Bernie with all the passion I have. And to do that, it is important to point out her liabilities and serious shortcomings, which are reflected in her policies and her moral compromises. I'm tired, oh so very tired, of having to compromise my values in order to avoid the catastrophe of a Republican in the White House. I'm thankful that there is a candidate like Bernie and an internet program like yours that reflects my ethics and my values. Steve, also in New York, says, I have to disagree. I don't think you do bash. The sad thing is this, what might come across as bashing to anyone else isn't as applied to her. Whether it's push polling, shenanigans in counting votes, posing as Nurses United Union members, calling Bernie a communist, or insinuating he's a political neophyte who just doesn't get it. I take it Steve's implying that she gets a pass for all of that, and I think there's some truth in that. So, if you perceive that I'm bashing Hillary, please understand that that is never my intent. And as Carol says, if I can't talk about those things, if I can't talk about those things, I can go somewhere else. I don't need to call in or listen to anything else, but we do pride ourselves on truth here. And the truth is, my conscience says I should vote for Bernie. And that's why I stay. Ron, in the far frozen wastes of Canada. I don't know how frozen you are right now, but it got downright tropical here today, Ron. I would vote for Hillary if she ends up being the Democratic candidate. However, Bernie and Trump are the only two candidates that give me the feeling that what I see is what I get. Trump is a narcissistic asshole with ego and money. Bernie is Bernie. I would love to vote for Bernie, but Hillary has been breathing high-level political air for a long time, and she's now working hard to do politics. I think she'll get the nomination. I'll vote for her, but I don't have to think of her as anything other than my second choice. And I get that. You know, that's November pragmatism. So, just, you know, and your thoughts are welcome on these things. Ray, I hope you will forgive me if I, No, Ray, you get your say here. You took the time to email. I'll read it. Earlier, Ray said bravo, just simply bravo. A moment ago, Ray wrote in and said, I have more respect for disease-infected rabid pigs than Clinton. That's bashing. That is bashing, Ray. And I'm not going to do that. But I did kind of want to I just wanted to make that clear in case, because, you know, the nature of demographics is such that if one person's saying it, that means several are thinking it. So I wanted to be clear about that. If she's the nominee, what does that mean for me? Well, it means I don't have to worry about yard signs until, like, you know, Labor Day. I remember when we put an Obama sign in our yard in 2008, and my son was beaten up on the bus and called a nigger lover. Maybe I'll just keep the signs out of the yards. Yeah, well. 20 minutes before the hour, I have filibobstered my way through more than half of the program. I apologize for that. If you would like to join in conversation in the program, you are more than welcome so to do. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. 574-8178 or 304-663-4676. Some people have more luck than others with that. We will, also Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. We will take a brief break. I want to thank David in South Carolina and Karen for jumping in this evening and being first out of the gate on our evening attempt to pay the bills here. We've got about $1,000 to deal with this week, so we really can't afford to go in the hole at all. Thank you very kindly, David, and thank you, Karen. We are $46 down the road now on our evening attempt to raise $200, or, you know, the minimum is $200. There's no max, I don't think. We've never found it if there is. But we try to raise $200 every evening. Thank you. So let's take a break. And again, your conversation when we return. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back. And I promise there's no Uber commercial. 14 minutes before the hour, and that was the, for those, I had a couple of, hey, who's that? That's the Alabama Shakes, and that's their Grammy Award-winning best rock song, Don't Want to Fight, and it just seemed to fit, you know, because I'm an old DJ. Let's run over to line one where Charlie's waiting. Hey, Charlie, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I'm kind of perplexed right now. To me, I don't think Hillary Clinton will be the best thing for this country. And you can call it Hillary bashing or whatever, but I would much rather see Bernie Sanders in there.
And see, that's the point. I don't think that's bashing. If we wanted to spend the next hour and 15 minutes or so on it, Charlie, I think you and I could probably do a pretty admirable job of it. The problem here is that, no, we don't have the Great Depression like FDR had to deal with. But we're in a way we're in a different kind of bind, and this system cannot sustain itself for very long without completely coming unglued. And I don't see in Hillary Clinton even a willingness to address the root problems.
I don't think people understand just how badly the economy's heading right now. I mean, we don't manufacture anything else in this country like we used to. And, you know, it's in a country that doesn't manufacture anything, there is no economy. And, you know, we could bring manufacturing back to this country and we could do it in a environmentally responsible way. You don't have to pollute to manufacture. People don't realize that. You know, I really think that we need to get off fossil fuel. I think you would probably see cancer rates and everything else drop.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right, Charlie. In fact, I read an article over the weekend that said the Saudis, and granted that's not the United States, but the Saudis may be straight up flat out of fresh water in as little as 13 years. They got a lot of oil left. Not so much on water. And it was interesting because it went on in terms of detail to say that the Saudis use in the ordinary course of a day twice as much water as a European family does or a European person does. And I don't know how that compares with an American. But on a global basis, we are in desperate straits. And on a national basis, we are in desperate straits, regardless of whether we realize it or not.
Yeah, it's people. Excuse me. People don't understand too. You know, we hear a lot about electric this and electric that, but you have to charge the batteries in electric vehicles and so forth.
Yes, you do.
And the batteries do not last forever. And you're going to wind up like China did with a whole bunch of toxic lead dumps, you know, where batteries have been discarded.
Or lithium ion. I mean, the battery technology is changing and growing constantly. But until such time as we're charging them with solar energy or wind-generated energy, it's still a problem. Because for as long as we rely on hydrocarbons of any sort, be it gas or oil or coal, then we just perpetuate the problem. And we really need to address this on a moon mission basis. That, you know, within 10 years' time, not by 2050. I mean, that was groundbreaking. Martin O'Malley said, you know, by 2050 we're going to be off fossil fuels. We don't have that kind of time, Charlie.
No, we'll all be dead by then. It's just the way it is.
And frankly, you know, from a foreign policy standpoint, I don't think we can bomb our way to peace and prosperity.
No.
And I'll be honest, I don't trust her judgment. Because every time she's seen an opportunity to bomb somebody, she's been all in for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I the business about Benghazi and all of that, that's just stupid. But there were decisions made to go ahead and bomb Libya. And hey, hasn't that worked out well? Not really, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it. Basically, you have people fleeing the country and they have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
It's, and, you know, the more war and all that we perpetuate in the Middle East, the more famine there's going to be because, you know, people can't grow things whenever there's stuff getting blown up all the time. And it's going to be sad.
Well, it is, and it, you know, there are chickens that will come home to roost, you know, blowback, or so I fear, if we don't get our own house in order. And the idea that somehow, well, the idea that we need to put foreign policy ahead of domestic policy. I'm not sure I'm ahead. I'm not sure I'm not sure I'm going to take cards in that game. I think the people.
Well, you take
I think
care
the,
of your own first.
Well, yeah. Because well, there's a larger world to participate in global issues. We're us, and we're the only ones who can fix us.
But our interference in global, in countries all over the globe, every time we interfere, we wind up forcing people to live together that don't want to live together, and then there's war comes after that. And
or we take or we take a culture where people have successfully lived together, albeit with a little bit of brutal force or a lot, and we open it up to chaos. I mean, is our national memory so short, Charlie? And I'm not talking about the Birchers, Baggers, Booger Eaters, et cetera. But on the progressive, do we, I mean, have we forgotten who started that mess over there and how it got started? I mean, it wasn't just, Hillary Clinton wasn't the only Democrat who voted for George Bush's war. But she's the only, the only Democrat running for president who voted for George Bush's war, and that to me makes a lot of sense. You know, that makes a big difference.
There was a guy in Nashville. This was back whenever I lived in Smyrna before I moved from Smyrna to Louisville, Kentucky, and then back to Gallatin. I've always lived around the Nashville area since I left Kingsport back in 1995 because I couldn't find work. But, you know, there was a guy that owned a computer store, and he was from the country of Yemen, and I used to talk to him a lot. And he was saying that there's plenty of resources in the Middle East for everybody to live together in peace. He said there's plenty of land. But because of the different cultures and the different what used to be kingdoms and stuff like that, and a lot of it still is, you know, the people just won't share the resources with each other where everybody can survive.
Yeah, right. Because that's a manifestation of how. Of how it's how power is controlled. It's how power is kept conglomerated in one place instead of being able to, you know, power and water both work the same way. They both flow and seek their own levels. Unless, you know, you're some sort of brutal dictator or strong man or and you seek to draw all the power and concentrate it in yourself. And that works in some places. You know, as far back as Plato, in the Republic, he writes about the best, you know, the best state is a state that is ruled by a philosopher king. Someone who's schooled in the arts and music and science and mathematics and statecraft and all of those things. And it's great in theory, and sometimes you get one, but the problem is you can never guarantee that the philosopher king's son or daughter is going to be one too. And and when he or she isn't, that's when the trouble arises.
Yeah, it's been since 1993 since I've read The Republic. I had to read it in an oral communications class back whenever I was attending at the University of Memphis, or back then it was called Memphis State University.
Yeah.
And we had to read The Republic. But, and, you know, the Greeks had a very unique way of looking at things. It was sickening, a lot of what they said, you know, like a slave is a tool that is an extension of his master.
Now, that's most of that ancient world.
Yeah.
In ancient Rome, a slave could not give testimony in a legal case, no matter how trustworthy, unless the slave had first been tortured. Because that's just how they viewed the world. And, you know, Athens invented democracy, had a flirtation with it, and by the time Plato's writing, he wanted nothing to do with no damn democracy. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, a democracy actually is, you know, it's actually just a rule by the mob.
Well, it is, unless it's somehow tempered. And that's, you know, that's the nature of a lot of the discussion that you get in the Federalist Papers. How to manage both the rights of the majority, because they're a majority, but at the same time keeping them from just stomping the guts out of the minority because they can. Because that's the way mob rule works most of the time. There's a lot of us and a few of you, too bad for you.
That is true. Well, I'll get off here and let somebody else talk for a little while.
All right, Charlie, always good talking to you.
Good talking to you. I appreciate it. Oh, let me ask you one other thing before I go.
Sure.
I have been sending in contributions to the Horn, but evidently with all these, what do you call it, the conceal and carry roundup society or whatever, what would be the best amount to give to get the most bang for your buck?
It just depends on what's happening at a given time. I mean, we had 20 $10 slots last week from the Secret Open Carry Roundup Society. Somebody will, you know, at the spur of the moment, somebody will put a matching challenge on the table. Of course, the first of every month is like clockwork. That's when Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge comes through. So on the first program of the month, which will be next Monday, is March 1st, there will be a $200 challenge on the table.
Oh, okay.
And so everything, you know, the first $200 gets doubled.
No.
So, you know, and thank you very kindly for being part of the support network that keeps this all going.
Well, I enjoyed the program. It's well worth anything that anybody would give. I mean, I enjoy listening to this.
Oh,
program.
Sorry. I cannot be trusted with mathematics, Charlie. Tuesday is March 1st.
Oh, okay.
I'm pitiful, okay? Yeah, so, yeah, Tuesday's March 1st. Thank you, Gerald. What would I, you know, me and Cyphering, what are you going to do? But, that's how that works. Charlie, it's good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you.
Bye now.
Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh. Our buddy Charlie down in Middle Tennessee. Thank you, Gerald. Thank you. Yeah. God. And there I was at the beginning of the program saying that this would, that this time next week would be starting. Oh, dear. No. Tuesday is March 1st. And, hey, I bet that's Gary. Is that you, Gary?
Yes.
Hey, welcome aboard.
Hey, do you mind if we rehash this Apple versus FBI stuff?
Hash away.
Okay, I listened to the program Friday, and of course there was a lot of, you know, interesting stuff there. A lot of it, you know, I didn't, you know, kind of confusing and all of that. But in reading, you know, several articles on, you know, the inner web tubes and all that over the weekend and today, am I incorrect? And I'm just going to give you with where I kind of ended up on this. Am I thinking correctly that whatever Apple does, let's say Apple complies with what the FBI wants, and they give that to the FBI, or however that occurs, that only applies to the phone that they got sitting right in their mitt?
I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case, because what was his name? Michael Mullen, who was the national security guy and the CIA guy, is the only guy who's ever been both, pointed out what James Comey at the FBI wants is, you know, he doesn't necessarily want to unlock a phone. He wants to establish a precedent.
And yeah, what does a precedent mean? Let me frame it a different way, and for just my own mind here.
Okay.
Whatever the FBI wants, and Apple gives it to them, whatever they want, they say, okay, we're going to do it because we're good Americans and blah, 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 and all that. And here you go, FBI, here you got it, okay? Now, there's no way they could use whatever Apple gives them, okay, to get into the iPhone that's sitting in my pocket.
Not necessarily true.
Not necessarily true.
And I mean, I'm not trying to be obtuse about this, Gary, because I'm on shifting sands myself. But if what I've read is true, you know, they're not saying Apple unlock this phone for us. They're saying, Apple, we want you to disable the function whereby this thing will brick itself if we try too many wrong passwords.
But that's what I'm saying.
So if Apple makes a gizmo that'll do that to one, it'll do it to all.
Yeah, but they can't do it to the iPhone that's in my pocket.
Not until they have it in their hot little hands, presumably.
Okay, so I guess I don't see the problem in that. I guess I don't know. Maybe I'm not, you know, quite grasping the privacy thing here. But if it's in my pocket, and the only way that they could do use that tool that Apple now gives them to be able to get into my iPhone in my pocket, okay, they can't do that unless they get my iPhone in their paw.
Yeah. Some of this, you know, these are privacy concerns, and they are a worry to people, more or less, depending on a continuum of how concerned you are about privacy. For instance, during the conversation Friday, I was talking about the fact that, you know, we found out in not too great an amount of time after the Patriot Act was introduced that, lo and behold, those national security letters and some of the other mechanisms were being used by jealous husbands, jealous boyfriends against, you know, the other guy. And there's as Mullen described it, they want to play at law, especially on a national basis. Law enforcement wants to play so close to the, and this is the phrase he used, so close to the line we get chalk on our shoes.
Yeah, but
and so we're talking about one of those slippery slope, camel's nose under the tent kind of situations where you start, well, you know, and frankly, that's, and people worry about that, Gary, because that's the history of the Fourth Amendment. You start out with the Fourth Amendment, and it's a pretty plainly worded thing. And then as technology changes, the government comes along and says, yeah, but technology's changed, so we need an exception. And through case law, you know, opinions written by courts, not modifications to the amendment itself, we wind up with, good faith exceptions, pin registries, spike mics, the various forms of data collection up until you got what we had in the Bush era.
Yeah, but nothing to what I gathered or to the way you gather what they're asking for now allows them to get into my phone when it's in my pocket.
Let me share with you what Ron just wrote in, and he's the expert on this.
Yeah, I was listening to him. He's like over my head.
He said, not really. The FBI will have tech experts watching, and the steps, techniques that Apple uses will be closely watched and noted. It is establishing a precedent. Getting into the iPhone in your pocket, just a couple of steps down the road. And by the way, any iPhone running iOS later than iOS 8 is basically exempt because the protection is amped up to a much higher level than the iPhone 4 and 4S. That fact alone disturbs the FBI. And then this is just kind of a little hint. Anybody questioning why the CIA and the NSA haven't been heard from in this argument? Big smiley face. Just saying.
Well, that's where I was going with this, is, you know, with this whole metadata thing, you know, if they got this whole big old metadata thing going, why don't they know what's on it? If they're collecting every conversation.
Well, no, we've had moments like that, Gary, where I've asked that very question. I remember when the guy shot his girlfriend in Baltimore, then got on a bus, went from Baltimore to New York City and shot two cops. And where was the Uniblab 10,000 in all of that? Because we know they can trace it. What happened?
I think the fact is,
certain elements of national security have this stuff. The FBI apparently doesn't. But
yeah, but I guess, Mike, not that I don't have an iPhone, but I got a different kind of smartphone or whatever, Android, I guess, or I forget what the hell it is. It's not an iPhone. But to me, you know, it was sounding like, well, Apple's going to do this, and then they're going to be able to get into anybody's iPhone at any time. In other words, they don't have it in their paw. People got it in their purse or their pocket.
No. I can see how that would be an easy mistake to make. No, it's just that if they get this, eventually they'll get that. Because as Ron says, they want the precedent. They want the precedent. They want the precedent. Because courts live and die by precedents. And so, I mean, for instance, our good friend Randy in PA keeps me up to date on cybersecurity issues. And, you know, there's a blue bajillion ports in your computer. And those things have various vulnerabilities. I mean, it goes way, way back to the very beginnings of the Horn, Gary, when Peter Godbold found out that we were literally being monitored. That a particular port was being pinged by a defense contractor for the NSA every night. So this isn't that, but it leads down the road to that.
I don't know, for us folks who really want to believe in the Fourth Amendment, I guess it's a natural progression to go to that, you know, the whole slippery slope kind of thing.
Well, like I said, the entire history of the Fourth Amendment, Gary, is a history of a slope so slippery it has no coefficient of friction at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, Fourth Amendment's pretty much moot anyway.
Right, and the thing is, with this, you know, because it's terrorism, they get more traction, the FBI does. On the other hand, though, I mean, if I could just sort of take the problem we're looking at and, you know, twist it, you know, 45 degrees in space, the FBI doesn't need anything inside that phone to know why what happened in San Bernardino happened. What happened in San Bernardino happened because anybody who wants a gun in this country can, either legally or illegally, get a gun. And most of them are gotten legally. Remember, every firearm manufactured in this country under a legal firearms manufacturing license begins its life as a legal firearm until somebody does otherwise with it, whether it be this Uber driver in Michigan or the people in San Bernardino.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't have to be Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. of the FBI in order to... I know you're old. You've got to be... Yeah, you're old enough to remember that cheesy old television show. You don't have to be the FBI to figure out that the reason they were able to do this is because it is easier to get a firearm in this country, even in California, than it is to get a fishing license.
Yeah, okay, well, at the moment, what they're asking for is not this, be able to get into any phone at any time when it's not in their paw. They got to have it in their paw. And then you don't have to go back to Apple and say, help us get in this phone or something. Because I read an article that says, well, Apple had gone to Apple before with iPhones and said, you know, help us get in this, you know, because it was, you know, part of some criminal investigation, I guess. Other criminal investigations. Is that correct?
If I understand correctly, and Ron went over this Friday night, they had helped out up until like September, and then they said no more.
Wow.
And okay. They said, well, you know.
Because on a technical level, the phone got unlocked and then reset or something, and so that's what's.
The phone belonged to the city of San Bernardino,
right.
And the FBI told them to go in and reset the password on the iCloud. They would probably already have all the information they wanted if the FBI had not been, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it, stupid. Because that was stupid for the FBI to do. They were all in a lather, and you know, I realize it probably doesn't seem like, you know, okay, as long as they can't get to mine, but let's say you're somewhere, somebody is somewhere, not necessarily you. Let's say somebody's somewhere and they're using their iPhone and they take video of the cops doing something that the cops ought not be doing, because, you know, that's been happening a lot lately.
Yeah.
And in some cases, the cops will try to take away your phone. In some cases, the cops will stomp a phone. Well, if they've got this, they can just go, they can have that phone in hand, they did with the magic, and boom, they're in, and suddenly the evidence disappeared. Or what if you've got an electronic banking account that's tied to Apple Pay, and let's say your payday goes in to your account there, and the cops get it, and they get your phone, and you get it back, you go, hey, I got paid, where's my money?
Yeah,
I mean, these are not necessarily academic questions.
Yeah, it does. Well, but for me right now, it doesn't sound as scary as I thought it was sounding. You know what I mean? Because they got to have your phone, and if they got your phone, you know, you're probably in trouble with the law anyway.
AOL or the law doesn't like something you did.
Well, we all know, you know, crooked cops and all that. I mean, that's always...
Well, and that's the thing. I think, and I know it's probably unfair, but given the abuses that we've witnessed, especially of late, I think we should probably judge all such cases by worst-case scenarios. In other words, what's going to happen, not if, but when a bad cop gets a hold of it. Because, see... I mean, take something as simple as a firearm. We in this country think cops should carry firearms. And as we are constantly told, the vast majority of cops who carry firearms do so responsibly, and they never kill anybody they're not supposed to kill. But because we also give the bad cops firearms, well, they wind up killing Tamir Rice.
Yeah.
Or Michael Brown. Well, there's no reason to think that this technology would be any different, is there?
Well, probably not. But you know, we're talking about you know, abuse that you know, would be in the realm of being illegal by law enforcement. You know, versus me not worrying about what the iPhone sitting in my pocket. As long as it's in my pocket. You know, that was the part that was kind of spooking me, thinking, well, shit, they can get in everybody's phone. I thought that this is what the crux of the argument was, you know. That seemed like it was being framed that way with what I heard everybody talking about and some of the articles I read. But I don't think it's a problem. I mean, if they get your phone, they get your phone. If they get your phone, you're probably in trouble with the law.
At that
point.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You know.
There's this further. And again, this comes from Ron. He says, the FBI probably has the information on that phone, but evidence must be gathered under legal auspices. Aha, and he's absolutely right. The previous two agencies mentioned are not legally allowed to collect information on U.S. citizens on U.S. territory. And by the way, specifically where you're concerned, Gary, if you're not running a phone on an Apple OS, you might as well be posting all your information on a digital billboard right up there beside, you know, assuming they're interested. So they're in. If you're not running Apple's iOS, you're already compromised. But Ron continues and said, I would also suggest that you need to think about the role of the other countries in the Five Eyes consortium: Britain, Canada, France, U.S., and Australia. Every one of those national electronic security organizations is prohibited from eavesdropping on their own citizens. There's nothing prohibiting Canada's CSE from listening to U.S. citizens, especially when requested to by our biggest trading partner. Just saying.
But they're talking about the metadata stuff there.
No, everything. The iPhone. No, everything.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. But I don't get it. I guess this metadata stuff isn't that big of a deal either, otherwise they would know, right? You know?
Well, the metadata stuff is in many ways useless, Gary, because the theory was that you could sort of pin it all on a big computer bulletin board, and the computer would sort out the relevant stuff. So far, not so much.
Yeah, well, it just, you know, just sounded like not just Big Brother, but big giant brother, you know, the metadata.
No, big global brother.
Yeah.
I mean, we all sort of look out for each other, you know. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours.
Yeah, well, okay.
I try not to put, I mean, I've got one of these little pocket devices that we can't live without anymore. And, you know, I Facebook quite a bit, and I put stuff out on Twitter. The stuff I put out there is stuff that's already in the public, at least, you know, in the public eye. And one of the hardest conversations I've had with my family, and I don't mean my wife, I mean kids and other younger people, is, you know, why do you get on Facebook and say, just brushed my teeth? Or why do you put the contents of your interior monologue out there? Because it's not just like governmental, it's not just governmental stuff, Gary.
Yeah.
When you're using Facebook or Twitter or any of these social media platforms or email that's provided to you for free by Google, they get a proprietary interest in it by virtue of your signing off on the end user license agreement to participate.
Yeah, I don't do none of that stuff other than email. That's it. But anyway, I think I got a little bit better grasp on it, and I guess I'm not as paranoid as I was. But the bottom line is, what the government is asking from Google doesn't allow them. It allows them to get into that iPhone they got in their hand, but it doesn't allow them to get into my iPhone in my pocket.
True.
End of story. Okay, so I'm not that worried about my privacy.
For the time being. But again, the caveat obtains, Gary, that it's Apple's encryption that got the feds so in an uproar. Android, not so much. Because so
like my iPhone, if they got a hold of that, they wouldn't have to call anybody to get in it, no problem, blah, blah.
Well, I mean,
Apple's.
Right.
With Apple's.
Yeah, you're.
They got to go to Apple.
Yeah, I'm assuming you've got an Android device because you said you don't have an iPhone.
I think so.
They can get into that. That's not much of an issue.
Yeah, if they have it in their hand.
Yeah. And
I mean, I know once I'm on the phone, you know, and whatever I'm doing is going to those towers back and forth. You know, I know they could intercept all that. You know, I get that. You know.
Yeah. But
anyway, okay.
All right.
All right. Okay. It's a little bit clearer in my mind. Well, a whole lot clearer. I was really confused listening to everybody Friday. I just kind of scratched.
Well,
my
it was.
Head.
I loved Friday's conversation. I thought it was. Yeah. It was awesome.
it was certainly interesting. You know, and then when you had Rick and somebody else talking about legal stuff and all that and throwing all that in there, and oh shit, you know, I said, I'm lost, you know, on this stuff. But okay,
all right
we'll call in some other time.
All right I always enjoy hearing from you, Gary. You take care.
All right. You too.
Bye. Now my buddy Gary Laborman. 25 minutes past the hour. Let's see. Let's run over and check in with post Mardi Gras Jim in Louisiana. Stan, hey Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know, man?
All right. No, I like your first part of your filibuster. You know, I mean, I'm exactly, you know, where you are. It's like, I'm definitely running 110%. I won't like voting for Hillary, but if she gets the nomination, I'll even put in this to just grayed out, which, or even hook or crook. I think it'd be the lesser of two evils situation, her versus a Republican, any of the Republicans, you know. And I'd love to vote the Green Party, but. The Green Party, you feel good for about 5 minutes.
I had my brief little dalliance with the Green Party, and my Green dalliance is so over now. I mean, don't get me wrong, Jim. I love Jill Stein. Jill Stein has great policies. Jill Stein's policies probably align very closely with mine. But you know what? Voting for Jill Stein's like voting for Santa Claus.
I was going to say unicorns. exactly.
Because there has to be some acknowledgement. And look, it's as Bernie's as close as you're ever going to get, I think, because there's an acknowledgement that, I mean, he's working within a system that is hopelessly flawed and hopelessly corrupt. But he's giving us a chance. You know, it ain't up to him. It's up to us. And yeah. You know, there's stuff out there that goes with all of this. I mean, there's a reason he's having problems among certain ethnic groups in this country. Reading Charlie Pierce earlier today, I saw him writing about, you know, Bernie had a big rally in South Carolina. It was very well attended, and it was all white people. Now,
I
I got no answer for that. Why is that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going on Facebook. I noticed a lot of people, you know, darker pigment. Maybe it's just the people I follow on Twitter who are really strong supporters and it really vehemently anti-Hillary. I'm thinking one woman I say I know, I tweet with her, I follow her, and her thoughts seem to be congruent with mine. You know, I mean, I tend to follow people I tend to agree with. You know, I don't go for the tweeting back and forth debate thing, you know? I mean, do you think I'm misusing my Twitter?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll get into a debate or discussion sometimes, but for the most part, you know, I tend to go with people I agree with, you know what I mean? Or semi-agree with. But, I mean, I've noticed, you know, with the Hillary tweeters, a lot of them seem to be in love with the fact of a first female president, which, like I've said before, I have no problem with. It's just, not this one, you know. I got to go with Bernie, and you know, like I said, unless I get really disillusioned, and other than that, I'll have to, you know, I'll go with Hillary, you know, instead of going to third party thing, you know, the Green Party. I mean, why didn't the Green Party doesn't seem like it wants to win? If to change the subject a little bit.
Well, no, they just don't know how, and they don't know how, and they don't have any money.
Yeah. And if they
okay,
try,
see the tea baggers would have disappeared as quickly as they trashed as quickly as their poorly spelled signs went in the garbage if they had not had a shit ton of money behind them, Jim. You know, there's nothing organic about the tea baggers. The Koch brothers just took the John Birch Society and rebranded it.
That's where the radical billionaire, if he would back the Green Party, which he doesn't, which speaks volumes. What's his name?
George Soros.
The guy who's
slack. Everybody who listens to the horn has to pick up. Yeah.
Yeah. If he were to go ahead and back them, then they might be a power. They'd be much more of a power than they are now, or something to reckon with. And you might not even need a Bernie Sanders, per se. But I'm not giving up on Bernie. I mean, I still think there's a chance. And
No. There's a very good chance. You know, I still say that you can mark his chances by the desperation of the other side, Jim. And the fact that once again over the weekend after Nevada, saying, "Well, yeah, Hillary's got momentum, and Bernie's done for. Hillary's got 500 bajillion million trillion quadrillion super delegates. Why are you Bernie people even still doing this?"
Yeah, well, I've noticed that on the Twitterverse that it seems like when I scroll across that, and I notice they kind of the tweeters, and you never know who's really tweeting, and they kind of denigrate Bernie supporters. And I know it's back and forth, and I understand that, you know. It seems like a lot of the anti-Bernie stuff seems to be, and I'm not being objective because I'm looking at it from my enlightened point of view. Seems to be, I don't know, a lot more, negative because I don't know. I haven't seen a whole bunch of negative about it on the Bernie side. Have you or?
I haven't seen nearly as much of it as has been complained about. Now, just by example, a little bit ago, I had a lovely note from Tim from L.A. Under the subject line, he said, "You're a class act." He said, "You don't bash Hillary. You don't even bash the Republicans, but you do speak truth to power. Yet when people believe that Bernie supporters scream English only or her followers masquerade as unionized nurses, you're a class act by not calling her the C word or a witch or other sexist comments that would divide the Democratic Party and its people. You're even upset when people post on Facebook Shillery or Hitlery or Killery, and you even said you'd vote for her in the general election if she wins. You're a class act, and I respect you," Tim says. And I thank you, Tim. That's very kind of you. And it's true. I don't have any tolerance for that. I think it's I think it's silly and juvenile to call her Hitlery or Killery or Shrillery or Shillery or any of that other stuff. I'll leave the fashion critiques to people who are experts in fashion.
Yeah, I'm gonna be confession time. I did a little bit of that, but I just call her HRC. That's just it. It's HRC because it's one thing. It's easy to type. It's three letters. But you know, and like you say, you don't have to put out that negative vibe out there. I think, you know, like I said, I'll vote for her if she gets the nomination. So
but like the business with Bernie Bros, that just popped up entirely too inorganically. It's almost like it was focus grouped or something by a campaign with a lot of money, or I don't know. I haven't witnessed it. Now, what I have seen is some of her partisans saying, "Well, you just don't want to vote for her because you're an old white man." And, you know, to the extent that I'm even willing to deal with rejoinders like that, yeah, I say, no. And then I patiently list all the reasons why I find voting for her in a primary when I have a choice, when I can choose someone who more nearly matches my own personal values, I'm going to vote for that person. Let's be honest. If it was Hillary versus Elizabeth Warren, I'd be an Elizabeth Warren voter.
Me too. But your analysis was, right on about the primaries where you shoot for the moon, your best wish for dreams come true. You know, in the real election, that's when you. You know, you face reality, whether you're going to feel good for 5 minutes voting for Green Party or whatever, or try and stake a claim for, you know, the lesser of two evils, which is basically, you know, I mean, what I've been doing pretty much every election. I mean, Obama, I voted for him gladly both times. And so I felt like a charge, you know, And then when he won in 08, I was like, wow, man, maybe things are changing. But then in reality, the way politics works, and some of it I can blame him for not doing, but then there's things I don't know about that go on, you know, and then just, you know, the compromises one has to make in that office and just the other things as much as we know, think we know, there's a lot of things we don't even know that go on that, you know, that make a president decide what they want to side, no matter how good or bad we think they may or may not be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do.
So, that's a little rant. So,
hey, right. You know what? Don't bottle that stuff up. It's bad for you. It's good to hear from you, Jim. You take care.
All right.
All right.
Feel burning.
Indeed. Feel the burn. Bye now. Our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan. And just a reminder, like I said, we get a ton of bills that are due at the end of the month, and we really can't afford to have any holes in fundraising this week. And we've got $154 to finish fundraising for tonight, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where that is. And hopefully there will be some, you know, 5 at a time, 10 at a time. Doesn't matter. It's just important that we not fall behind. And meanwhile, over in New York, there's Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well.
I'm sorry. I was sitting at my little local pub on the listening to the program on my phone.
A concept which I absolutely love, by the way.
Yes. And hearing the conversation about the phone, about how you can't get into the phone if you don't have it in your hand with what they're asking Apple to do. A couple things. First of all, this meme that has come out is, well, Apple's done this before. I want to reiterate, and we talked about it on Friday, Apple has never done this before. What they have never done is the government has never said to them, here, develop a piece of software.
And let us watch you do it.
And let us watch you do it to break open, not just to break open the phone, but to hack the security. Let's be honest, it's hack the security. And then the other thing too is what was being said tonight, that the notion that, well, you know, as long as they don't, it's only that phone, and as long as they have, as long as the only way that they can use it is if they have my phone in their hand. That's absolutely not true. As long as they have what's called the IMEI number, or the serial number, or your phone phone number, which are numbers unique to every single device in the world, not the phone number so much, but the IMEI number and the serial number, they can get into your phone as long as it's turned on anywhere in the world from anywhere in the world. That's what scares me about this. In addition to the precedent, in addition to the fact that I don't trust the government, it's not that I don't trust the government because I just have a hunch. I think the government, particularly in the last 20 or 30 years, has shown me time and time again that I can't trust them. I can't trust them to say, oh, no, we're only going to do X. Hey, it's just for this. It's just,
well,
you know,
you're working in the wrong business to be trusting the government.
Yeah,
which is a problematic issue for me, Steve, because I believe in the notion of government.
I like
what Madison said: if men were angels, there would be no need for government.
I'm not saying I don't disagree with that notion. I disagree, and as I said, as I qualified it. You know, in the last 20 or 30 years, and what you were talking about earlier, the erosion of the Fourth Amendment. I mean, some of these exceptions to the Fourth Amendment are just this good faith thing. That probably goes towards eroding the Fourth Amendment almost worse than anything. Because I know, Bob, if I ever go in court and I say to a judge, hey, judge, you know what? I had a good faith belief that that light was green. And he's going to look at me, he or she's going to look at me like I've got three heads growing out of my shoulder. And it's in light of that, I've written in about this in terms of the notion of I don't look at government as a thing out there other than the way it is now, because we've lost control as far as I'm concerned. I look at government as people taking collective action for problems that we can't solve individually. But we're not there anymore. And the government has, and this government, the way it is right now, has shown itself that we're not, shown us that we're not there anymore. Because you and I don't control it. we don't matter anymore. And it's in light of that that I don't trust it. And it's in light of that that I say, let me tell you what, I've heard this before. But again, that's only a piece of it. This notion that they have to have my phone in their possession in order to get into it is just not true.
Within, no. I'll, for the sake of argument, yes. Now, within the parameters of this particular issue, though, they do have to have that phone to get into it because of the way that they screwed up from the get-go. By having the San Bernardino folks reset the iCloud password.
Okay, that I can understand, but as a general notion, that this program—it's almost like this program that the court has ordered Apple to write—is only going to be a program for that phone, and that in order to use that program or to use a program to hack into a phone, you have to have it in your possession is not
no,
right.
No. Once they have it, Steve, the world's going to have it.
Right.
Okay? And given, I mean, come on. Look at what the FBI did with the bird sanctuary Patriots, okay?
Yeah.
And we look how much damage was allowed to be done there before anything was done about them. All right. Now, I don't know about you. Wow, cool. We just got the sound of a car horn from a street in New York City.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
No. That's great. That's great. It adds a level of ambiance that you just don't get in every program. but considering it's the FBI, the minute the FBI has that software, who else is going to have that? Well, the first people that are going to have that, if they don't already, is China. Okay.
Right.
After that, the people who are going to have that are the organized crime types. Okay, because let's not pretend. And, you know, I'm sorry, Agent Fred, but in many instances, look back at the FBI fingerprint lab scandal. They're fuck ups. Okay.
Yeah.
They screw things up because they insist on maintaining this standard, which probably as a lawyer drives you crazy, that we're going to judge them by their best, not by their worst, which is what I was talking with Gary about regarding, you know, firearms. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're not judging the FBI by their, we don't dare judge the FBI by their best intentions. We have to judge them by their worst.
And not just intentions, but actions.
Yes.
Like I said a million times, I don't like seeming like I'm this, you know, teabagging government hater, because I'm not. I don't like this particular iteration of it. And I don't trust this particular iteration of it because they've shown me that they can't be trusted.
Well, look, if the FBI can't figure out that the reason San Bernardino happened is because guns are more common in this country than shoelaces, then, well, I mean, you know?
No, I get it. I mean, the thing that bugs me, and I'm going to get off here because I don't want to take up too much time. The thing that has really bugged me about the whole issue is the notion that is starting to become fact is that Apple has done this a bunch of times before, and they haven't. There was an article today I read.
If I understand correctly, what's happened in the past is law enforcement has come to Apple and said, can you extract the data? Apple extracted the data and handed it back.
Yeah.
This particular thing they have not done.
Yeah. It's like, here, we have a lock here that we want to get into. Can you please make a key to open it? And by the way, even though we're not going to take that key, wink, wink, nod, nod, nudge, nudge, we're going to watch you make that key.
Yeah, you wonder what's wrong with handing the phone. You know what's, well, you as a lawyer know, you know what's wrong with handing over the phone, right?
Well, at that point, it's in their control.
Well, it screws up the chain of custody.
Yes, right. And then at that point in time,
the evidence itself becomes useless.
Yes. It's the whole poison.
But we're not built, but the people, but they're dead. So there's not, I mean, there's no case. Unless, of course, they think that they're going to find something inside the phone that will lead them to, I mean, they already know where they got the guns, right? I mean, we know they already know where they got the guns.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, let's not lose sight of the fact that the owners of the phone are not those people.
Right. No, it's the city of San Bernardino.
San Bernardino. Yeah.
By the way, Ron says, Steve sounds like he must be a natural born Canadian, spirited across the border at birth. Yeah, with your skepticism of the good intentions of law enforcement. No, you just happen to work in a field where assuming the best of law enforcement constitutes malpractice.
Yes, I mean not only that, Bob, it's happened to me. I've been arrested for the egregious crime of breaking a telephone and spent a day in jail and was mugged and fingerprinted and sent before a felony court and had a judge laugh me out and say, you shouldn't be here. And I've had it happen to me. So,
it will, it'll color your perception.
It absolutely has colored my perception. Okay, well, I want to get off here because I want to let other people in. I don't ever like to hog time.
All right, well, good to hear from you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And please convey our regards to the entire city of New York.
Oh, I shall. And I just want to say I apologize for not being able to ante up tonight. I'm a little low on the funding.
Don't. Hopefully, no. Other folks will. Other folks always do. You do plenty.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, take care of yourself and goodbye and good luck and love the Horn family.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Bye
now. Bye-bye.
Our buddy Steve calling from the mean streets of New York City. Yeah. I love that. I do. I'm simple. I admit it. Okay. It's about 11 minutes before the hour. And yeah, 154 bucks. Is that it? Yeah. 154 to go in fundraising this evening. Let's go and check in over toward Maryland, my Maryland. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, hi, I'm on here. Hi, it's Harry from Baltimore.
That's what I thought. Hey, Harry.
Yes, hi. And I'll be brief, or I'll try to be brief anyway. I'm calling just to sort of reiterate or kind of talk about again about what really I admit is the unscientific list of the so-called liberal media that Nicole Sandler has, and I'm sure it was a long time ago, created on her website, and the way in which, in fact, it seems on the left, as I mentioned on Friday, that internet, radio programs, streaming live just on the internet, even on that list now, there are many more of them than progressive or liberal radio stations and even, real news blogs and certainly more than, what are called, sort of aggregator channels of progressive programs. And so I'm, and in fact, on the list of, internet streaming programs, aside from you and Nicole Sandler, I'm not sure that many of those 40 or so are broadcasting every day like you do. And probably very few of them are broadcasting every day. In fact, I know some of them, make a podcast or broadcast maybe once a week or twice a week. So I'm just trying to, in a sense, drum up or try to, emphasize the point that your show, your program, one that you've been doing 5 days a week, and of course, and probably Nicole's also, but, there aren't going to be that many people doing this on the left, and at least there aren't at the moment, and who knows when there will be, and, we are going to end up very much depending on programs like yours And so I'm just really asking everyone to think about the fact that, you know, if they had one media program that they trusted and, or that they knew they could get, and it was not commercial and it was not, no advertising, and it could be gotten every night of the week on the internet, you know. I hope everyone, and I know many people do, but I just hope that everyone will think about the future of your program.
Well, you know, as you were talking, Harry, I was just doing some quick math, and we know what trouble I can get into doing that. But I think I've got something like on the order of 2,500 programs, and that comes out to about 7,500 hours of radio.
Yours, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's astounding. That's really, you know, just incredibly. I mean, I just admire him, and I'm in awe of it. And, you know, I for one, certainly want your program to continue, you know, for as long as possible, for, you know, years, decades. And, you know, I am also, you know, frankly, very concerned about the general, you know, kind of cultural moment in this country. And, you know, I for one, frankly, feel that if Bernie Sanders does not win the Democratic nomination, I could be wrong, but I just feel that things may start to boil over. And in that case, you know, a program like yours is going to become even more valuable to people, you know, for accurate and, you know, thoughtful programming, you know, about what's going on. And, you know, I, as I've told you about, you know, many times, you know, I don't even listen to the radio anymore. I don't listen to NPR. Can't stand it. I haven't watched TV in at least 10 years. And so I'm really, you know, at least I myself, you know, feel very much, frankly, in debt to you because of your program and, you know, a few others like Dr. Bill and Nicole Sandler. And I, you know, and I can't go back. You know, I just think the commercial media has just fallen on its face. And, you know, and even national, as you call it, National Petroleum Radio, I just don't think is providing, you know.
Well, I love it.
Kind of news.
And I know we may have some audio issues, but I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you very well.
Oh, okay, great. Apparently, and I had this link courtesy of Isaac earlier. There's a report from Mediaite, and I only mention this because you were talking about the failure of the for-profit media. There has apparently been audio that has leaked out. You may or may not be aware that a week or so ago, Joe Scarborough and Mika sat down for a one-hour infomercial with T-Rump. And during the break, they were chatting back and forth. and through, of all people, this is through Harry Shearer.
Yes, he's a great comedian.
Right. But apparently, at some point, I guess Joe looks at Mika and says, nothing too hard in return to what questions she should have. Scarborough and Trump then chatted about their thoughts on his most recent debate performance. The next morning when I saw the CBS poll, I knew that the people who mattered didn't think you lost it, Scarborough said. I mean, you came in a strong second. And I'll tell you what was most revealing thing. Bush came in last, the guy you attacked. Brzezinski then tried to ask Scarborough about a question she planned to ask Trump, trying to be discreet but eventually giving away the subject. Do you not want me to do the ones with deportation? Scarborough said, we really do have to go to some questions. That's right, Trump agreed. Nothing too hard, Mika. Okay, Brzezinski said.
You talk about, you know, abandoning your
you know,
professional values.
This way to the egress.
I'm sorry? I didn't hear what you
said. This way to the egress.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, I mean, I don't want to keep... I'm not going to keep you, but I just wanted to emphasize to your listeners out there, you know, people, you know, who I know are listening, who I don't know. But, you know, the fact that, you know, your program, I think, has become more and more important as the commercial media basically just, you know, collapse or just basically abandon all their, you know, journalism values. And, you know, we're going to need independent internet streaming programs. And I, you know, I do want your program, you know, to continue. And I do want you to have the, you know, all the equipment and have a studio that's, you know, at least adequately comfortable and having all the equipment you need, et cetera. So that's really just kind of my plea and my hope.
Well, thank you, Harry. Thank you very kindly. I appreciate it. I'm glad you called in this evening.
Well, thank you, and I'll let you go because I know time is short anyway.
All right. Take care, Harry.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Time is short, and it's time to get out of here. Let's see. Isaac tells me that no. Android phones are more secure than Apple phones, and that lots of people use Androids to hack into people with iPhones. You know, I don't do that kind of, not my bailiwick. But you know, take that as it may. So, wow, this one ran away in a hurry. Sometimes they do. Nice note from Bruce in PA. So the Apple discussion is very interesting, and it occurred to me that the next Apple update might include the backdoor being required by the court. Also, on a side note, I recall a story from the Bush years about the NSA or FBI being able to turn on the microphone of any phone at any time they desire, thereby making every phone a bugging device. So if the story was accurate, a subject I wouldn't need to own a phone, but simply be talking to a group with someone who owned a phone. Far too much Big Brother for me. Use this message if you think it's useful, and I do. Thank you, Bruce, NPA. Thank you very kindly. So, that's it. That's it for the evening. Thanks once again to David in South Carolina and to Karen. Thank you both very, very kindly for your kind contribution to help keep this on the air. Got $156 to go for the evening. Hopefully somebody will hear this and that'll be cleared out overnight. And remember, if we finish to the good, if we finish, you know, right, the month of February, the Beat the Swede All Year Long Challenge will kick in. And the Swede, our buddy Scott, will provide an extra $60. So 156 to go this evening, 200 tomorrow, and we really can't have any holes this week. Thanks very kindly. Have a great night. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.